Okay, so we were talking about your work in the shipyards, and what I was going to ask you about now is you were describing a bit what it was like to work there. When you first came in, how did you become a union member?
They hired you out, you had to be in a union. Oh, I should have known, you shouldn't have told me I was on that. Although, watch what I say. Everybody that went in joined the union right away. Or you quit. I think you're there a month. I'm not sure about that. You got a limited time to think things over, I think. And then we automatically went into the went down to the meeting and joined. Paid your $10, I think it was.
Did a steward come up to you, or how were you approached?
No, no, it was understood that you had to be in the union. I couldn't tell you that part, you know, I didn't think was material. I couldn't remember. I mean, I really can't remember how we just knew that there would be a meeting and we had to go down and you joined the union. Of course, I sort of knew that in general conversation, you realized everybody that worked in those days had to join the union, more or less. You know, it was understood.
What were people's feelings about unions initially?
Well, you must remember you were in the middle of, you were in a war, and you didn't think about these things. You didn't think whether it was right or wrong. I think that comes later, much later, maybe in the 50s, early, well, when the war was over. Imagine that's when that came in then. Is it right or wrong? Mind you, I think it's right. I mean, people have all forgotten what it was like before unions. Not so much in Scotland, because it seems like there have been unions there forever, but in Canada. Especially loggers, they were terribly hard done by. Miserable. I wasn't in the camps at that time.
How did you become active yourself in the union? Because you did.
Oh, I get you. You mean, why was I a shop steward?
Yeah.
You're out to the nitty gritty. I was approached by the girls, you know, because that's something else you understood. There was shop stewards in all the departments. So, of course, the women had to have their shop steward. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. That was understood. And I said, yeah, that was okay. So they vote you in a bit, you know. They want you in, so that was that. As a matter of fact, I always did say that if you talk too much, you know, about things, I made you a boss. I made you a shop steward. That wasn't original, I mean, that was said before. I'm not taking any credit for it. But that was understood, which was right, because, and there's always the dissenters, you know, that want to create trouble and among the women as well as the men.
Now, why would they approach you?
I guess it was Gabby, maybe.
And had you, come from a family that supported trade unionism?
I came from a family with no father. 5 children. You see? Although I had worked, he didn't join the union then. There was no union in the First World War, because I was in the shipyard then. And there was no union. My gosh, no business being in there, but I was in.
That was when you were a teenager?
Mm-hmm, very young teenager, just practically out of school. 15, I think.
Right. Were there a lot of women working there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Different to what it was in the Second World War.
Can you compare the two? Like, what the differences were?
Does that run whether you're talking
about?
It
doesn't
enough?
Matter, yeah. And I've got one on tape, so don't worry
about it. Well, of course, that's one of the questions that I never thought about, you see. You don't think about these things. I didn't think it was much different. the work was different. I mean, it wasn't that same work. It wasn't as many people either. In the shipyards, there was different kind of boats. There were really like the Prince George. Those boats were in for
renovation.
Yeah, converting into, that's right, yeah, knew the word. That's one thing I am funny about. I like good grammar. Don't always use it, but I like to hear it. Mm-hmm. Even Jack Webster's slipping too now, I notice. And his grammar, he was a stickler. You see how I digress?
Okay, so the conversion was in World War II that they were doing that?
Yeah, they didn't do it. I was in the... They weren't built... You see, in the First World War, ships were natural. They weren't not too natural here in Canada. But that was the shipyard district where I was. All the ships, the famous shipyards like Fairfield, Harlan the Wolf, Stevens and all this, on the Clyde in Scotland, governed. And it was just a matter of getting the ships built. I was in what they called, I was on a winch, an electric winch, that put up the plates on the side of the ship. And then there was sweepers that kept the place generally clean, women, used to be men. We were taking the place of men that had to go to war. Not so much in this last war, I think in the First World War.
And when you were on the winch, what would you push a button and it would lift
no,
up?
No, I followed signals. I had to see a man a little ways away. Old Paddy's name was. You still can remember that. And he would, as the whatever position the plate was in, he saw that, I didn't. I watched him. And I just took his signals and turned on or off, slowed down or something.
That's a very responsible job, actually.
Couldn't have been very responsible for a 15-year-old to do. It's easy. All you had to do was see. The man that had the responsibility was the man taking the signals from further down, you see. Like maybe they were putting plates up in the bow, and that's quite a way from where we were, in about the middle.
How would you end up working with him? Would you come in? How you come into the shipyards and then, and would they train you and say, now you're working with Paddy? Or
yeah, you come in, you don't know anything, so they say, Paddy, this is Nancy, and she's going to take over the winch, which was very easy. It was a simple thing, you know, and you sat and you just pushed the handle. You know, it sounds very interesting, but it wasn't really, it was boring. You turned it off, turned it on, or put it halfway or something, slowed down, or I knew the signals.
Okay.
And then you're not left alone during that time, you see, and then you're on your own. I never made any mistakes. They have slaughtered me.
How was he with you? Was he?
Oh, very nice. He was an Irishman. Very nice, and I didn't want to drink the tea that they made at 6 o'clock in the morning under the ship, you know, and the fire under there. And he was always good at seeing I was kept warm in the winter time. And he said that we needed it, you see. Lots of sugar, which reminds me. Horrible stuff, but we drank it. They knew.
How long did you work? What were your hours?
I think we started at 6 till 5:30. Saturday we started at 5:30 till 12 in the morning.
Those are long hours.
Certainly, that's what the unions were for. I mean, that's what the unions were working for. And you know, I cannot remember either that war or the Second World War, what we were paid. I can't remember that.
Was there a union during the First World War where you were working?
Well, there probably there would have to be, because I guess my father was in the union. He was a seaman. He went to sea, deep sea. But it was never talked about in our house. We were too small, you know, to understand. Maybe it was spoken about, but we never.
And then he had died, right?
Oh, he was killed. He had an accident on the ship Christmas Eve. Died Christmas morning. I was 11. I was 11 that Christmas, that year. April the next year I was 12.
That must have been really financially hard on your family.
Oh, yes. Mind you, my mother never made us feel that there was a lack. Mind you, I suppose there was compensation because it was a ship's house. And then the owners of the line, which was the City Line at that time, the City of London it was on, they were very good to my mother. So I don't think we lacked for anything, you know.
So is that part of why you went to work, though?
Oh, we had to go to work. I mean, there were, even compensation wouldn't be that much, with five to feed and a war on. Because you see, the war started the next year.
And were you, which child were you? Were you oldest or youngest?
No, I had an older sister. She had to leave school at 13. And you had to have permission to leave school. You just didn't quit. And my mother had to go to work. She went into war work.
What happened at the end of the war then? Were you still working? Or?
No, I wasn't at the, I don't think I was in the, I can't remember if I was in the shipyard when war was declared or not. I mean, armistice. No, I wasn't. I think I was in the engineering place. This were these, I was in three places, but didn't stay long in the first one, the munitions. My uncle made me quit. Because I was falling asleep in the midnight shift, you know, that long shift, the graveyard shift. I was working a machine then, too. A rough turning machine, a lathe, they called it. But working conditions were good for us. They supplied overalls. We got, pants and a jacket. Your hair had to be tied up. You see, they observed all these safety rules. So that's really all about, I can tell you, that has to do with the unions and...
Well, that's the First World War. And then, did you work in the Depression at all?
Oh, I did. I had to do odd jobs. My husband came out of work in 1930. Logging was absolutely at a standstill. And I kept the pot boiling for a while, till 1934, till I went back up to camp, got a job in camp. He was a steam engineer.
Mm. So you had worked between 1930 and 1934?
I worked between, but 1934 then I went up to the, camp. Mm. I only had one daughter for that. And it was nice. That was really a good life for people.
During the Depression when you worked, what kind of work did you do?
I waited table. I scrubbed floors. Did a whole lot of things. All kinds of jobs I had never done before. I always felt I had to work.
That's interesting, because wasn't that kind of unusual for women to feel that they had to work? Or was it?
No, you either had to work or you had to live. I don't think you girls, any of your generation or the previous generation, my oldest daughter, yeah. But it was there was no relief, you know. You just couldn't run to the government for everything. there was a certain amount, but there was no money. And my husband, oh yeah, my husband, forgot about that. He, they gave, like they saw that the men were employed for their welfare. It wasn't called welfare, it was relief. That was when the relief came in. And they worked, and they got money for that. It was not a lot, but it was better than the way we had to live before. And, but he hated it. As a matter of fact, he helped to build Kitsilano Pool. Oh God, how he hated that pool. We live in Kitsilano. He was the hand that took not working very badly. Can you imagine? I'll tell you, because it was a fact. A man had to take a couple of suitcases and walk down in Vancouver, at that time we were in Vancouver, to a place, and you picked up all kinds of food that you would never dream of eating before, you know, rice, beans, stuff. Well, every Friday night, my husband got a headache, because I had to go on Monday. For 4 years. It was awful.
So he'd be in pain for the whole weekend working up to this?
Yeah, besides other things. Which I won't mention. Arlie was a quiet man, you know? I don't think he ever got over it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them didn't.
Yeah, how was... Like, so what happened there? Was it hard on family life for people, or...?
Well, as a matter of fact, before, and even after he started on the Kitsilano Pool, we were down on Harris Street, downtown. And during this lovely weather, there was a bunch of us, families, and we walked down, because we hadn't money for the streetcar. And we walked to Stanley Park, Second Beach, and right beside the pool, and in the grass, you know, there was willow trees and everything. And you took your lunch and your supper, and you cooked it down there. So we really had, health-wise, it was marvelous. And my husband, that hated the sun and the beach, he come with us and he was a good cook. But it
you
was...
You put him to work?
Sure, oh yeah, he had to do something. It was really wonderful. For that, you know, in that sense. So when you're young, you can do an awful lot of things. And I love to swim. And we'd go in and we'd swim and come back out, the families, and we'd make, like, a sort of picnic. And you forgot that things were so bad. Then you were tired out when you went home.
Right. What about other families where men were unemployed? Was there a lot of family breakup? Or did people...
Yes, I believe there was. There was a couple of the people I knew. But I think I could always get work. You know, and I wasn't afraid of working. And then that keeps you from...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it accepted that women would, I know I kind of asked this before, but would it be hard on the men if their wives could work and they couldn't, or was that something that people just simply said that?
It's the same now, the same then as it was now. The men that just are absolutely devastated at not being able to work, you know. It breaks down their morale, don't you think? It's what we're suffering from now. And I think we're going to get another depression.
We might already be in one. They just call it something else.
Well, we never called it a depression. What did we call it?
The Hungry 30s, that's what they called it.
Actually, when that was happening, during what we now call the Depression, did people see it as a depression, or did you just live through it, or how was it talked about?
I don't think people spoke about it very much. They, you had a warning, you know, in 1929, there was the stop, all the people committing suicide, and loss of money. So that was the beginning. And as a matter of fact, people lived out their outside their income just the same as they're doing now. There isn't anybody lives in their income right now. But there is a day of reckoning, it'll come. They don't realize it. And they will feel it an awful lot worse, those children, that are, because they're such a different lifestyle. You know, we didn't have our own homes. You couldn't. You were lucky if you had a room.
Yeah, people's expectations are very high right now.
Oh, yes. They're living in a false lifestyle, really. There's no poor people. That's why I keep telling you. There's no poor people today. Everybody's rich.
Okay, was your husband, or are you involved in any of the unemployed movements of the 30s?
No, my husband would run a mile from anything like that. He wouldn't even... I think I can tell you, he didn't like unions. He would have been today, he would have been one of the men that, what do they call it? He never scabbed or anything like that. But he would have been, like these, non-union. He'd have been a non-union.
Contractor, carpenter,
yeah.
Whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, just sort of, about in terms of yourself, though, were you involved in any of it?
No.
No. So then, when you got a job in the shipyard and you became a steward, how did he feel about that?
I didn't feel any different. When you're young, you don't.
Right.
You know, maybe I would have now, maybe if it was now, you get officious. I didn't get officious. I didn't get a chance. But what they do is the girls would come if they had complaints, which there aren't many, and every week, I think it was once a week, we went into the foreman's office and talk over if there's any complaints and what we could do. Mostly the men did all that. In my bailiwick, there was I was there to see if things were what were talked about, and then I would tell the girls. You know.
So you report from them to the executive, would it be, or was there a steward's body, or how did that?
No, the shop stewards. That's some parts of that I can't remember. I don't even remember the boss's name, Walter somebody. He went into his office just off the shop, like I was in the pipe shop. Each shop had their own stewards, shop stewards. We're stewards, there was no discrimination of men and women. There was no person in those days. I mean, there's persons today now, it's and chairpersons. Whoever would have thought that was coming? Mind you, I'm not a thinker, so there you are. You have it in a nutshell. There would be, and probably were, women that could see ahead, you know, and were active in it. Like Mrs. Pankhurst, you know, the suffragette.
Mm-hmm.
There was no suffragette. No, you'll have to ask the question because I can't.
It's okay. I'm fine. Okay, so we're talking a little bit about the steward structure, and so the woman would come with you to you with complaints. What would those complaints be?
I haven't a clue. Don't remember.
And
they would be petty working conditions, probably.
Right. Right. And you'd then represent them, and then would those things change with the company?
I can't even remember that.
Okay.
You see, the no, I can't remember. I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
Like the wages, I can't even remember what the wages were. They were good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the first in Scotland, you just brought your money home, you gave it to your
mother. Right.
She gave you back a little. There was no question.
Was your husband working during the war? Did he have a job?
Yeah, well, he was a steam engineer. Yeah. And he was mostly logging caps. Besides, you see, they were after all the spruce in Queen Charlotte for airplane spruce. And they tried to, they went up to Port Hardy. No, they went up to Rupert. Was it Rupert to Port Hardy to see if they couldn't put an air strip in there, but they couldn't. It was getting washed away. Millions of dollars wasted in that.
So was he out of town a lot?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he worked out of town. And now and then I went up to camp, you know, it wasn't all camps that had houses, accommodation for the wives.
Yeah.
But when there was, I went. I've moved more up and down the Queen Charlotte's, packed my lovely china. I never broke a piece either in suitcases. I was a china collector.
Oh.
Good. Not talking about Royal Crown Derby and Limoges and Wedgwood.
Transient china collector, that's wonderful.
Gosh. Yes.
So how did he feel about you working in the industry? Was that fine with him, or?
No, he didn't. A lot of the men didn't like it very much, you know. But it was necessary. You were into debt. After the Depression, which was the war, just took us out of that depression. But we were in debt. I don't know if everybody paid it back, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt I had to work to help pay it back. And having someone look after my only one child at that time. Now, because the other one had grown up, she was in the army. You feel you had to help. At least I did.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was always around. So, dear old mother.
So your mum did the child care?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Stayed with us.
So, did your husband adjust to you working, or was that something you didn't agree with? Or?
Oh, in the First World War, he wasn't there. In the Second World War, he wasn't there much either. He was mostly away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I worked.
Right. Did he, what were his feelings about you being a shop steward if he wasn't very excited about unions?
I never spoke about it much. He wasn't interested. When I was up at camp, I'd say, why don't you go to the meetings? And then there's the... But he believed in the union because he worked through previous years before union. Like, he was a third, fourth class engineer class, that means the lowest there is, fourth class. When he was 17, he was supposed to be 18. And he was a very, very good engineer. And then he got the third papers. His father was an engineer. And then my father-in-law used to say, get him to get his second. He said, very good. He's a better engineer than I am, but he wouldn't. So that was that. He wasn't ambitious.
Mm-hmm. So, but he became an IWA member, I guess.
Oh, yes,
on.
Sure, for years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about the women who you worked with? Were most of them your age or younger than you? Or?
that would be younger than I am. I was a little old. How old was I? 39. Well, they'd be under that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have trouble getting hard because of your age, or was
that? Oh, no trouble at all. I never had any trouble to get a job. No, there wasn't any trouble. The word went out. There were so many women to go into Wallace War Workers. God, I had that little button that was a pretty thing for years now. Somewhere in the moving away, I lost it. Just recently. So I was one of the fortunate ones that got on, because there was more women applied than we could fill.
Mm-hmm. What were they looking for and who they hired, do you know? Like what quality?
Young and healthy. That's all they, because there was nobody had any experience.
Right. Except that you would have had more than most women because you worked in the First World War.
It was altogether different. Right. Conditions were altogether different. Right. You know, wouldn't even apply.
Right. When you did first get hired, who did you apply to? Was that
Wallace War Workers.
You went directly to?
Brad dried up. That's where I was. And that was the Wallace War Workers, WWW, Brad Drydock.
Do you remember what they asked you in the interview?
They didn't ask your name, address, and I think that's all the phone number. They didn't, you, not like today, where you've got to get a resume of everything. Mm-hmm. They didn't even ask a few. They knew they had to have women, and the jobs were, some of the jobs, you know, like riveting, and the girls that drove the cranes.
Yeah.
They needed quite a bit of training.
Let me just turn the tape off.